Is he my prince? Is he the toad? Waiting, wondering, is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, slide up my skirt. Get me up, be the biggest little flirt. Welcome to the Shame-Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Welcome to the Shame Free Zone. This is your host, Veronica Monet. Joining me this evening is Dr. Alan Goldhammer, who's actually the founder of True North Health Center, a state-of-the-art facility providing medical and chiropractic services, psychotherapy, counseling, as well as massage and bodywork. It kind of sounds like a one-stop place. He's also director of the center's groundbreaking residential health education program and the author of the Health Promoting Cookbook, as well as the co-author of The Pleasure Trap, Mastering the Hidden Force That Undermines Health and Happiness. Dr. Goldhammer, welcome to the Shame Free Zone.
Well, thank you for having me.
Glad to have you here. Now, I know that you've got a new book out, or I think it's actually the chef at True North Health Center, Ramses Bravo, I think is his name. He's got a new book out. Is that true?
That's true, yeah. We call it, coincidentally enough, Bravo.
Yes, Bravo, the same as his last name. And we're going to, you know, give you a chance to talk about the new cookbook. But if you don't mind, I'd like to get a little bit of a history for you. I noticed that you went to chiropractic school in Portland, Oregon, and I was wondering, is that your home state by chance?
Actually, I grew up in Southern California, down there in Long Beach, home of the Bloods and the Crips.
Went
to school in Portland to go to chiropractic college, and then had the chance to go to Australia to do osteopathic college after that.
Well, Australia sounds like a better destination to me, but then I'm a native Oregonian, so I'm kind of like, Portland.
It was a little hard getting used to the weather in Portland. Growing up in Southern California and seeing the sun a lot, going to Portland, that was a bit of a change.
I was just up there in July, and it was 77 degrees, and there was nothing but gray in the sky the entire time I was there. And it rained at 77 degrees, too. That was fun.
The only thing that beat the rain was one of the years I was up there going to school, Mount St. Helena decided to blow its top, and that added some entertainment.
That's been quite some time ago. I remember when that happened.
Well, it has been a long time ago. I know the other day my grandson was asking me, he was showing me his new computer, and I was explaining to him that when I was a little boy, we didn't have computers. And he said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, when I was a little boy, we didn't have computers." He says, "Well, Grandpa, when you were a little boy, did they have electricity?" I told him my friend Thomas invented it.
Yeah, that's funny. It reminds me of she was a four-year-old girl. And she said her daddy had a swimming pool. And I said, "Oh, when I was growing up, I had a swimming pool, too." And she goes, "Was that at your mommy's house or your daddy's house?" And I looked at her and I said, "Well, back a long time ago when I was a little girl, mommies and daddies lived together in the same house." And her mouth got really big and her eyes really wide. And she's like, "Ah, wow." Perhaps a disturbing trend in the current culture, but nevertheless, one that exists. So what, by the way, do you prefer to be called Dr. Goldhammer or Alan?
Alan is just fine.
Okay. Alan, I was wondering, what set you on the path towards nutrition and health?
When I was 16, I wanted to be a better basketball player than my best friend, Doug. And he could always beat me, so I started reading books and trying to figure out how to get healthier, thinking that then I could beat him. The problem was it completely failed, because although I adopted a health-promoting program, so did he, and he can still kick my butt even to this day.
Okay, so it doesn't matter how healthy you are, you some people are genetically predisposed to win at basketball.
Yeah, so that was my impetus, but I did get interested in this idea. I met a doctor, actually. His name was Gerald Benish, and he said that being a doctor was the best job in the whole world because the patients did all the work, the body did the healing, and all the doctor had to do was take credit for the good results. And I thought, that's the job for me.
Well, now, that's actually kind of a different approach than most Western doctors, don't you think? They're kind of, they prescribe medication and do surgery usually, and nutrition seems to be the last piece of advice that they give out.
Well,
is that your sense, too? Or?
At the True North Health Center, we have a slightly different approach. We believe that health is the result of healthful living. So our focus is always trying to teach our patients how to live healthfully, so that their bodies can do what it does best, which is heal itself. And healthful living involves diet, sleep and rest, as well as exercise. So, you know, by focusing on nutrition and exercise and sleep, we found that many of the chronic degenerative diseases that plague modern society can be reversed quite predictably and quite effectively.
You talk about something called the pleasure trap. This sounds very well, it actually sounds kind of seductive. It seems like a lot of people would want to be in the pleasure trap.
Well, the reality is that we're driven, you know, our brains direct our bodies what to do based on neurochemistry. In other words, our brains are trying to get our bodies to do the biological imperative of life, which is get enough to eat and avoid being eaten long enough that we can live to reproduce. Because it's only through, you know, survival and reproduction that our genes get passed on. And so the way the brain directs the body in what to do to make sure that we get enough to eat, avoid being eaten, and live to reproduce is by rewarding us when we engage in behaviors that favor survival and reproduction. And the reward is something called dopamine. So dopamine is secreted by the brain. It makes us experience what you and I know as the term pleasure. So the more dopamine, the more pleasure.
And dopamine is kind of a heroin-like substance.
Well, it is. In fact, dopamine is responsible for your experience of pleasure. The only natural stimulants of pleasure for human beings is food and sex. Food and sex, food and sex, food and sex. That's what naturally stimulates pleasure. Unless you're male, then it's sex and food. But whether it's food and sex or sex and food, these are the things that stimulate dopamine, and that cascade of reward worked well for our species. Obviously, we survived and we thrived. The problem was modern humans were very good innovators, and we discovered that there were certain chemicals that if you exposed an individual to those chemicals, you could artificially stimulate dopamine, and it would result in pleasure. And those chemicals we call drugs, things like alcohol and cocaine and methamphetamine. Artificially stimulate dopamine in the brain, they induce pleasure. For example, if you figure out how much dopamine is secreted by an individual having an orgasm during sex, and you compare that to the amount of dopamine stimulated by smoking cocaine, quantitatively there's 10 times as much dopamine secreted smoking cocaine. So you can imagine how reinforcing and thus ultimately addictive drugs can be, because they artificially stimulate that dopamine cascade. And as most
absolutely. And isn't it true that if you put a lab rat, give him a choice between stimulating the pleasure center of his brain or eating food, that he'll starve to death?
Actually, if you canalize the brains of rats and give them the option when the light is lit to get dopamine through cocaine, that rat will continue to push the button until it's dead. It won't stop for anything.
Yeah.
So it's very reinforcing. It's true in rats, it's true in mice, it's true in birds, it's true in people. The reality is that this artificial stimulation of dopamine is a trap. It's a pleasure trap. So the brain is thinking that behavior is good. In reality, it can lead to our destruction, as most people recognize when it comes to drug addiction. The thing that we talk about, though, is it's not just drugs that can artificially stimulate dopamine in the brain. There are also chemicals that can be added to our diet. And if you add, for example, these artificial stimulating chemicals to the diets of rats, for example, those rats that will reach a certain size on a diet ad libitum, that is eating as much as they want, if you add those chemicals to the rat chow, those rats will increase their weight 49% in just 60 days.
That's incredible. What kind of chemicals are we talking about here?
There are interesting chemicals that we know, like C6H12O6, or also known as sucrose or sugar. another one is called oil, and another one is called salt. So if we add sugar, oil, and salt to the diet of rats or birds or people, what happens is a systematic overfeeding resulting from this pleasure trap, and it leads the animals to become fat and sick, or in the case of humans, for us to become obese. And so that's why people are fat and sick, is because we've been artificially stimulating dopamine by the addition of sugar, salt, and oil in the diet in a concentrated form that up till recently in modern history was not available.
So are you advocating total abstinence from sugar, salt, and oil?
Well, what we're advocating is a plant-based diet that's what we call SOS-free. And SOS is obviously the international symbol of danger, but it also stands for sugar, oil, and salt. And so by eliminating concentrated sugar, oil, and salt from the diet, what you do is you eliminate the tendency to overeat. People are able to lose weight down to their optimum weight, and you avoid the diseases of kings, the diseases that only kings used to be able to get, but now are ubiquitous, things like coronary heart disease, diabetes, and autoimmune disorders.
So it's more European royalty tended to be obese, didn't they?
Well, sure, because they were the only people that could afford the diet artificially concentrated in sugar, oil, salt, and animal foods that lead to those diseases. The peasants couldn't afford, you know, for them, meat was a celebratory food. And for most people in the world, people can't eat unlimited quantities of these very expensive and efficient foods. It's rice and beans or beans and rice that dominate the caloric intake of most people in the world. It's only in industrialized countries and relatively recently that we can indulge in these very, very rich diets that can include the oil, salt, and sugar.
So I would think that you would get a lot of resistance from your patients about the SOS formula for health, that they would want their salt at least.
Well, sure. People are addicted to the artificial stimulation of dopamine. Alcoholics want their alcohol. Cocaine addicts want their cocaine. And people that are obese want to have their sugar, oil, and salt. And so, of course, there's resistance, but it doesn't change the truth. And if people want to lose their weight and overcome their coronary artery disease, get off their diabetic medications, and eliminate the pain associated with autoimmune disorders, this is an approach that's been proven to be very reliable and effective.
Yeah.
Now, once people are addicted, it's hard to get out. Just like some alcoholics, you can explain to them, your problem is that you're drunk and you need to stop drinking. But that doesn't translate into immediate action. Sometimes people need a little help. And that's what the True North Health Center does, is it offers an opportunity for people to undergo, in a medically supervised setting, things like therapeutic fasting and other means of allowing the body to neuroadapt back to a health-promoting diet.
Now, you do provide something called water fasting. What is that about?
Medically supervised water-only fasting is just that. In a medically supervised setting, people are put on water only for up to 40 days. And during that time, the body's able to overcome the acute manifestations of chronic disease, and you're able to escape the pleasure trap. So it's very much like a person quitting drinking. Once you get free of the addictive abuse, then you can adapt to a healthier lifestyle. Once people go through a period of fasting, good foods start to taste good again. You know, when you have a person that's used to a high sugar, oil, and salt diet, good foods don't taste good to them. The only thing that tastes good are things that are very high in sugar, oil, and salt. But once a person's gotten away from that, good foods start to taste good again. And with fasting, you can do it quickly. You can also do it just by eating a healthy diet, but it takes time. For example, sodium. When people are used to a high-salt diet, it'll take almost a month of a low-sodium diet in order for them to neuroadapt and adjust to where good foods taste good without all the added salt.
Now, explain to our listeners, what does it mean to neuroadapt? Can you put that in lay terms?
Sure. Like, for example, if you ever have gone from the bright light into a dark theater, you know how at first you can't see very well and you're kicking people and stepping on them and you sit down and you can't even see who you're sitting next to until the rods and the cones in your eyes adapt to the limited light, then all of a sudden you can start to see a little bit better. That's an example of neuroadaptation. So your nervous system adapting to the changes that you're exposing it to. With salt, if you're on a high salt diet, the only foods that taste good are high salt foods. But once you've been on a lower salt or a healthier diet, now you can actually start to taste the flavors in whole natural foods. It's funny, our program became a fully covered benefit for one of the big labor unions, and one of our first crane operator came in, and he was on a very conventional diet. And the very first time he sat down to have a meal. You know, it looked like he was had an esophageal stricture. He couldn't hardly swallow it. It was so disgusting to him. We're talking about fruits and vegetables and, you know, whole natural foods. And I commented to him, I said, it looks like you're having trouble. And he said, oh, my God, if I have to eat tasteless swill like this the rest of my life, I'd rather just die. Instead of going through a period of care here, why don't you just get a gun and shoot me in the head? Now, what was interesting is after a couple weeks of fasting, we were back putting him in healthy food into him, and he was eating it, and he seemed to be doing very well. And I sat down next to him, and I said, well, it looks like you're doing a little better. He says, yeah, your damn chef's finally getting the hang of it. It took me 20 minutes to convince him it was the same food as he was trying to choke down when he came in, but now he had adapted, and now good food started to taste good. And, of course, with our chef, Ramses Bravo, the nice thing is he's able to take, you know, simple whole natural foods and with his recipes make things so that even people that aren't quite as health conscious can find them quite tasty. And that's one of the things we're really excited about is now that we have this cookbook, even people that maybe aren't quite as excited about getting healthy can find that food can look and taste delicious. And the recipes are simple enough that even I can make them, so that's saying something.
Oh, okay, so apparently you're not that gifted in the kitchen, huh?
No, I'm a really good eater. I'm not so good at all the complicated preparations. So it's good that he's kept things nice and simple.
Now, we have, on my mother's side of the family, we've got some health sensitivities around diabetes and cardiovascular health. Just to give you, my grandfather died at the age of 55 from diabetes, stroke, and a heart attack. So we were warned, or I certainly was, at an early age to eat healthy or probably die young. But I have an uncle who said, you know, to my mother, says, I would rather die than eat like you do. And in fact, I know a lot of people do feel that way.
And you know what? They do.
Well, of course. But I'm wondering, the people who come to True North, what do you think gets them there and past that attitude of if that's the kind of food I'm going to eat, then I'd rather not be here?
There are a few variables, but the biggest one is pain. Pain is probably the best motivating factor for patients to make diet and lifestyle changes. Deep, agonizing, life-compromising pain. And that's why I really like working with people that are having a lot of difficulties with pain, because once you get them out of pain, they're motivated to be able to stay there. You know, some conditions like hypertension, high blood pressure, you don't necessarily get pain initially. In fact, the first warning sign of cardiovascular disease in 50% of the population is sudden death. They just drop over and they're dead. They never get a chance to realize that they're in trouble. Whereas other conditions like lupus and rheumatoid arthritis and ulcerative colitis are really agonizing and debilitating. And so those make really good patients because they're willing to do dangerous and radical things like learn to eat well, exercise, and go to bed on time. And if necessary, undergo periods of fasting.
So what was, I'm curious, you got this major union to start doing coverage for your services. What was the impetus for that? I mean, that's very uncommon. Usually people have to pay out of pocket if they want to get alternative
treatment. In this case, they were spending tens of millions of dollars treating the consequences of cardiovascular disease. And they had seen studies that we had published in the scientific literature that showed that not only was fasting a safe and effective means at normalizing blood pressure, but it was also going to result in cost savings. The reality is we took 174 consecutive patients that had high blood pressure, and we were able to get 174 people's blood pressure lower enough to eliminate the need for medication. High blood pressure, like obesity, responds very predictably if you do the right things. So as far as, you know, right now, pain, whether it's pain from disease or pain from the cost of the consequences of disease, those are what motivates people in our society to make changes.
There are some companies, I think, that are starting now to offer economic incentives to their employees for following a healthy diet. Is this union kind of on board for that, or...?
Well, I think that there is a shift taking place, not only with unions, but just in general. People's consciousness is rising. I mean, you saw Wolf Blitzer's show with ex-President Clinton getting on talking about adopting a vegan diet because he didn't want to have a second round of stents. And, you know, he didn't seem too happy about it, but he'd done it and, you know, lost 26 pounds, looks a lot better, and seems to be functioning better. So as more and more people become more and more aware of the body's ability to heal itself, people that do the things like we do are seen less like crazy quacks and warlike innovators that, you know, maybe are on to something.
Yes.
I can tell you the times are changing. When we introduced our first cookbook, the health-promoting cookbook, about 15 years ago, it took 1.5 years in order for the publisher to sell out the first printing. Okay, not exactly stellar sales. Mm-hmm. The Bravo cookbook was introduced, and they sold out the first printing in 1.5 weeks.
Congratulations.
So times are changing because people are becoming aware the old way of doing things is not working. Other things that motivate people, for example, union members, a lot of these guys with the treatment of high blood pressure utilizing antihypertensive medications often results in impotence. So they can't have sex, and that pisses them off. So, you know, some of them will come in, they could be coughing up blood, and they wouldn't go to the doctors. But when they are not able to achieve and maintain erection, now we're talking medical emergency. And so the fact that when you normalize blood pressure, eliminate the medication, and normalize circulation, some of those little problems begin to start to resolve. And that becomes extremely motivating for people.
Well, I got to tell you something. You are talking my language now because I'm a sexologist. And I get clients like that all day long, and the first thing I ask them is, "Are you on BPs?" And almost invariably, they are, and usually they're on a couple of blood pressure medications. And they'll tell me, "Oh no, my doctor told me that it doesn't cause ED, you know, erectile dysfunction." And I will go online, look it up for them, send them the link, and go, "Yes, it can."
And it's not just the hypertensive medications, but the process of developing hypertension is a narrowing and a reduction in adequate blood flow, and essentially achieving and maintaining erectile function is essentially a vascular problem. So virtually both the medications in terms of their effect and the underlying disease process is dramatically responsible for diminution in adequate sexual function as a consequence of this disease. And that just happens to be one of the things that often reverses, which, of course, is very reinforcing.
Okay, so I have a client in the Bay Area who has got this issue. I actually have several. But what would I say to him? Should I tell him to get this cookbook? Would I send him to your website? I'm just curious because I really do encounter this and work with this all day long.
Well, one of the things to talk about is this idea that health results from healthful living, and a lack of adequate function is a sign of ill health. And so then the next question is, what can you do to reverse it? And the big issues are diet, sleep, and exercise. Getting adequate recuperative sleep, engaging in appropriate aerobic exercise, and adopting a plant-based SOS-free diet. And a good place to start would be getting the Bravo cookbook, because the first pages in the book describe why SOS-free, and then you have 100 recipes and 2 weeks of integrated a menu and detailed nutritional breakdowns and the kind of information you need to actually put a health-promoting diet into practice.
Okay, is there some place on your website where I could send my clients to say, to draw that distinction, because they're coming to me with ED problems. So would I tell them, okay, I want you to go over to True North, and over here on this page, mm-hmm. It talks about blood pressure and erectile dysfunction.
Absolutely. We have a number of articles on our website, and the website is truenorthhealth.com. And when they go on to the website, there's something called the Learning Center. And the Learning Center includes something called True North Health TV, which includes all the video links, and it also includes something called articles, which includes both our scientific articles as well as lay articles that are easy to understand and talk about everything from a transition to healthful eating to how diet and lifestyle can help deal with these various types of problems. So by going to truenorthhealth.com, people can get access to lots of information. And then, if they should have some specific questions, we offer a free consultation where they can actually call and talk to me about their specific issues, and I'll give them the best advice I can about things they can do to try to get well.
Fabulous. I think you're going to be hearing from a few of my clients after this radio broadcast.
The downside is there's no easy way out. In other words, healthful living does involve consistently applying a healthful diet, appropriate sleep, and exercise. And, you know, it's hard for people to do those things, particularly when they don't feel well, because what they really just want is a magic pill to solve all their problems without them having to have to give up their addictions or actually get healthy.
Well, yes. Now, and how do you get past that obstacle?
I usually just wait until people have suffered so much they're willing to do basically anything in order to get healthy.
Okay.
When the drugs don't work anymore, when they've really given up and, you know, life doesn't seem worth living anymore, the pain becomes greater than the benefit, then they're often amenable to making changes. Or once in a while you get people that are maybe a little bit wiser and they just realize they want to do preventative care, and we're happy to work with them as well. But I have to say, most of the time, it's pain and disability that really drive people to make major changes. Very few people are willing to be proactive.
Oh, I remember watching a video about one study, and I think actually this was about raw food, but this gentleman was on the verge of having a leg amputated because of diabetes, and he decided that the raw food diet was so obnoxious that he'd rather lose the leg.
Mm-hmm. Well, and people smoke through their trach tubes, and they do all kinds of foolish things.
It's true.
See, I have an unusual practice, though, in that, you know, by the time somebody finds out about us, usually they're on referral, either from their physician or somebody that's been through our program. And so we tend to get a lot of really highly motivated people that aren't willing to just roll over and give up, but that really want to actually see what it's like to get healthy again. And so we have a group of, you know, we have about 40 people that are staying with us inpatient at a time, plus the outpatient practice. So we see literally 1,000 new people a year that are some of the most highly motivated individuals that you can imagine. We have an internship training program where doctors come from around the country and spend a month with us in rotation as part of their integrative medical training. And they say that the biggest thing about our clinic is you got all these really great people that are, you know, serious about getting healthy. And I have to agree. It makes it a lot more fun. We say we specialize in treating people that are going to have good results because, you know, that's really what it's about. You pay the price, you do the work, and then you get a good result. And people don't come back and say, I did all that work and it wasn't worth the trouble. They'll tell you it's the hardest thing they ever did in their life, but it was also one of the most valuable things.
Well, you know, and you've mentioned several times the therapeutic fasting, medically supervised, and I think maybe we need to stress that to the listeners because it is true that it's contraindicated for some people. Is that true?
Well, it's certainly true that we have to match the therapy of the patient, and particularly people on medications, people that have health issues, it's important that we review their history, do a physical exam, look at the laboratory, and give them good advice. People can begin these diet and lifestyle changes quite effectively without that level of supervision. But when we're talking about something like water-only fasting, particularly these longer-term water-only fasts, that's really best done in an environment designed to monitor and support people. Now, we've been doing this for 30 years. We've done it with 10,000 individuals. And it is a safe and effective process when it's done appropriately.
Right. And some of the fasts go anywhere from 5 days to 40 days, right?
That's correct, 5 to 40 days. We rarely go over 40 days.
You actually encourage your patients not to do a lot of movement during that fast? Is that true?
Well, we do allow them movement. We don't allow them aerobic exercise. We have another, it's part of the program here. It's an intense residential health education program. So we're doing yoga, meditation, body flexibility, and lots of educational classes. But while they're fasting, we're not doing aerobic exercise because it's important to conserve resources during the fasting state in order to avoid mobilizing protein reserves. We want what's burnt during fasting to be fat. And in order to make sure it's fat that's burned and not muscle, we have to limit activity during that period of water-only fasting. Afterwards, of course, we reestablish healthy exercise program.
Oh, my God. I'm sure a bunch of ears just perked up around that. So you realize that some of the listeners are going to try this water fasting on their own. That's one of the reasons I'm trying to help them understand that it's best done under medical supervision.
Sure. And if they go to our website and read the articles and on water-only fasting, where they read our book, The Pleasure Trap, the last third of which is on fasting, they'll understand why it would be important to do that in an appropriate setting. And so they can get themselves educated about that. There's lots of things they can do on their own, though, that will help them lose weight and regain their health. And again, they can get that information readily and freely off the website.
Which, again, is
TrueNorthHealth.com.
True Health, yeah. TrueNorthHealth.com. So this is the shame-free zone. Do you think we could discuss a little bit about the shame that people have around their eating habits? Because it's been my experience that when people are ashamed, then they tend to do things in secret. it's very, very entrenched behavior at that point. And trying to bring it out in the open and talk about it sometimes is the first step to changing the behavior.
I would completely agree. In fact, there's a lot of misconceptions about diet and about obesity. You know, a lot of people think that, you know, people that get fat are just lazy and they don't have any discipline. But the reality is the biggest reason one person becomes obese and another doesn't isn't so much the nature of their diet. It's the nature of their satiation mechanisms in their brain, largely which are inborn. And so that you can take two people on essentially the same kind of food. One will become obese and one will not. The one that becomes obese has slightly less sensitivity in the satiation mechanisms in their brain. It's just like you can have two different people that both drink alcohol. One becomes an alcoholic and one does not. That's not a moral judgment issue that's the difference between the two, but it may involve things like how much alcohol dehydrogenase they produce and other inborn variables. And so the important thing is if you realize that people that are struggling with this are struggling because they're just not quite as sensitive to some of these feedback mechanisms, it doesn't change what they need to do. What they need to do is to adopt a plant-based SOS-free diet. But it's not because they're a bad person, a weak person, or have some psychological variabilities that makes them fat. For example, if you take rats and you give them access to sugar, oil, and salt, as I said, they gain 49% of their weight in 60 days. It's not because mommy rat didn't love them enough or daddy rat loved them too much. It's not psychological. It's biological. And so you can let go of some of the moral judgments and just start realizing if I happen to be one of those people that has less sensitive satiation mechanisms in my brain, I can't get away with eating the ho-hos. I can't get away with eating the sugar, salt, and fat and highly processed foods. I have to be more careful about what I put in my mouth to avoid fooling my brain so that I end up systematically overeating. And if you do that, guess what? Regardless of the emotional scar tissue you carry, you will lose, on average, 2 pounds a week if you're a male, 3 pounds a week if you're a male, 2 pounds a week if you're a female. And you'll do that week after week after week until you reach close to your optimum weight.
And this is on the water fast, right?
No, I'm talking about on a healthy eating program.
Oh.
If you're eating a health-promoting diet, a plant-based diet, SOS-free, males lose an average of 2 pounds, 2 to 3 pounds a week, females lose between 1.5 and 2 pounds a week. And the reason is that women, biologically speaking, lose weight slower than men because they are energy-conserving fat storage devices. Women biologically are energy-conserving fat storage devices because they had to be able to store excess fat in order to survive a period of biological vulnerability called pregnancy. They have something called estrogen. Estrogen is a fat storage hormone. If you inject men with estrogen, they get fat. They grow breasts, they get hips. If you inject women with testosterone, they lose their fat. Then they get hairy and get cancer and die. So it's probably not a good treatment modality. But the reality is these are hormonally driven mechanisms that are biologically inborn. That's why if you get a man and a woman going on a diet together, the man is cheating at lunchtime, going to In-N-Out Burgers, and he's losing weight. The woman is measuring everything. She's being very fastidious, and 3 ounces comes off. A woman has a bad dream. She gains a pound. A woman walks by the buffet table and goes up a dress size. It's harder to lose weight if you're a woman than if you're a man. There's no question about it. But both men and women lose weight predictably adopting a plant-based SOS-free diet. And we've seen it over 30 years with thousands and thousands of people. It doesn't make it easy to do, but it makes it very predictable. You know, it's interesting. Women, in many ways, are much tougher, in my experience, than men. Do you know that women have babies? Do you know that men do not have babies? Did you know that? Now, it's a damn good thing. Can you imagine our society if men had babies? First of all, I can guarantee you one thing. There never would have been a second birth. There would never have been an instance, not even once, of a second birth. And there would be 12 babies born on the planet every year. That's it. Our species would be stressed. And it wouldn't be like women. You know, women have a baby. They squat down in the field. They have the baby. They're back to picking. No, if men had babies, lifetime retirement. That's it. One baby, you're done. It's national TV. Tell us about the time you had the baby. Well, let me tell you. Women have babies. Men can't even watch. Men go into watch. They pass out. Ask any obstetrician. You can't even. It's terrible.
No, you know what? And you had me with the whole how difficult it is for women to lose lose fat and how easy it is for men to.
Now, that doesn't mean as men we can't be fat. We can be fat, but we have to work at it. It requires discipline. We have to be consistent. With women, it's not so difficult. I mean, frankly, it's the natural order of things.
However, that is changing some, don't you think, with all the estrogen-like compounds that are in our environment now? It seems like a lot of guys are kind of becoming estrogen dominant.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure exactly what the data says on the impact of the estrogenic factors in the environment, but clearly there are changes taking place. I just think that men are developing more and more discipline. You know, it used to be, they say men have become so lazy that right now, if the batteries die in the remote control, we sit and watch the test pattern rather than get up and change the channel, you know?
Well, I don't know. I think men are a much maligned group, and I still have hope.
I don't know. That, you know, I look at the chairs they've got. They got the little coolers in the chair because it was getting too much trouble to ask our wives to get us another beer, you know? So now we can just reach down and pull it out from the bottom of the chair. I'm not sure.
They worked hard all day at the
okay, I hope so.
Worked all day at the office sitting down, so it's time to sit down some more.
It's harder, though, you know, in many ways for women. I think we have to acknowledge that. For example, you know, if you talk about women, and for example, a woman goes on a diet and loses weight, and she finds she's getting feedback at work, which isn't always positive, you know, especially from the other women. Because,
mm-hmm.
You know, she thinks she's losing weight to get healthy. They think she's doing it because she's a mate-poaching whore.
Well, you know what happened to Oprah Winfrey when she lost weight? The ratings of her show went down.
It was hard for people to relate to her, perhaps. I'm not sure.
Well, I think you're honest with me there. I think women do sometimes get penalized for getting thin.
I don't think men take as much social pressure from other men when they lose weight, frankly, because I think most of us are pretty oblivious and we don't really notice. But with women, it is a much more difficult challenge. And also, women are largely evaluated in our society predominantly on their appearance, much more so than men, who are evaluated oftentimes by their production and performance. And so I think what happens is that there's so much tied into body image and the realities of how women are treated that it's a lot more socially and psychologically loaded.
Even sometimes the act of weighing could be like a triggering event for a woman if she's got an eating disorder. Do you sometimes get women who have eating disorders?
We treat many people, many women and men, more so with women that have eating disorders. And we do it successfully because I think what you're going to find in many women, eating disorders are often just dysfunctional adaptations to the desire to lose weight without wanting to escape the pleasure trap. And once women realize they can reach satiety, they can have satiation, they can eat a healthy diet and consistently predict their weight loss, many of these aberrant maladaptive behavior patterns begin to change. So a lot of the bulimic behaviors and some of the other things that go along with eating disorders can be eliminated because women are now in control. They can feel satisfied,
right,
but achieve predictable weight loss. And we've certainly seen that over the decades with hundreds of women.
Could an anorexic go on a water fast? That probably wouldn't even be advisable, would it?
Anorexia nervosa is actually a very different neuropsychiatric condition than your binge eating or your bulimic behavior. And anorexia nervosa patients often would very much like to fast, but generally fasting would be considered contraindicated. With bulimic patients or eating disordered patients, again, we don't emphasize the fasting. We use a brief period of fasting just to kind of get their palate cleared out and help them neuroadapt, but the focus is on healthy eating and exercise and eating large quantities of low-density foods. You know, the truth is if you eat enough fruits and salads and steamed vegetables, there's not as much room left for anything else. And then your brain is able to be satiated and your nutritional status is able to be improved and weight loss is, as I said, very predictable. Because 2 pounds a week is 100 pounds a year.
You know there's some naysayers that have tuned in tonight, and they're probably saying, yeah, well, without salt, sugar, and oil, that food probably tastes so bad that that's why everybody's losing weight. They just don't even feel like eating anymore, which, by the way, is my way of, you know, getting back to the topic of your new cookbook, Bravo.
Mm-hmm.
But what would you say to that?
Absolutely true that initially food doesn't taste good when you're addicted to the artificial stimulation of those chemicals, and it takes a little while to adapt. It doesn't take very long if you use fasting. It takes a little bit longer, a little bit more patient if you do it with diet alone. But whether you use fasting or you do it with diet, as you adopt a health-promoting diet becomes more and more desirable. And to the point where it becomes preferential. And people have trouble believing that. But it's very much, think about this, if you're used to listening to very loud rock music, and that's what you like, and then somebody puts on some classical music, at first you may think, well, I don't like that. I'm used to, you know, rock music that's so loud I can feel it through my insulated boots.
Mm-hmm.
But once you learn to appreciate classical music, you may find you can get every bit as much pleasure listening to classical music as you did listening to music that was causing you to go deaf.
Well, it actually does change your brainwaves. So
absolutely. And just like chocolate cheesecake diet may be more stimulating. Eventually, you get to the point where the more delicate flavors of fresh fruits and vegetables, and particularly when they're prepared using wonderful recipes like Ramses Bravo has put together in the Bravo cookbook, people will get, not only can they tolerate it, but they get to where they'll actually prefer it. And then they get all the health benefits as well, and they get to have sex again. So, you know, you put all that together and everything works pretty good.
And they get to have sex again. Absolutely. And by the way, having sex, sometimes you can lose interest in food, which is just fine. I think maybe part of what people who have not gotten off of salt and sugar might not understand, that there's a whole bunch of, there's like a banquet of taste sensations that they're not experiencing, because they're getting like two or three there. But there are actually some very subtle nuances to the taste of food that are not detectable if you've covered it up with a lot of salt and sugar. Would you agree with that?
That's absolutely true. And in fact, I can tell you, after working with thousands of patients, there's nobody coming back saying, oh, no, I don't like the increased neuroadaptive response to being able to taste good foods. It's quite the contrary. They like being able to eat good foods, and they like the consequences of it. But initially, it's tasteless will. There's no question, when you go from a very high salt, high sugar diet to a healthy diet, at first it doesn't taste good. And you have to give the body enough time to make that adaptation. And that's one of the reasons I like fasting, because it's a way of making that happen quickly. And so, you know, maybe a person isn't willing to do this for several weeks as they go through the adjustment. I can bring them to the True North Health Center, and by the time they leave, they're finding that, you know, it goes from tasteless will to being not bad. In fact, we say, you know, one of the themes of the True North Kitchen is where you can make good food taste not bad. And because that's exactly what happens. It goes from being awful to being not bad to being good to being great. And it's the same food. What's changing is your palate.
Yeah. And really, you're just starting to, maybe instead of thinking about doing without the taste of salt and sugar, you think about the fact that you're allowing yourself to have all these other taste sensations you've been missing out on.
Well, and actually, you're still tasting sodium, because sodium is a natural ingredient within the fruits and vegetables. It's just not in such a high, overpowering concentration. What's interesting is, once people have adapted to a lower salt diet, when they go to try to eat out at a restaurant, they'll actually get like a burning sensation when they try to eat a soup or something that's oversalted. So now what you're actually doing is being able to more accurately and effectively pick up the taste in whole natural food. Believe me, people on these diets, they love eating. They look forward to eating. It's just that it doesn't have to be quite so overpowering in order to be able to stimulate their neural responses.
Well, if we could, before we leave our discussion tonight, I wonder, can we go back to blood pressure for a little bit? Because that is something that affects people's sex lives. Is this just for men, by the way, or does hypertension also affect women's sex lives?
It does affect both men and women, although it's a little bit more obvious in men just because of the nature of erectile function. It's more visible. It's more pronounced. But sexual function and responsiveness can be impacted both by hypertension, vascular changes, and the medications used to treat it, both in men and women.
Mm, okay. So, I'm over here, by the way, looking at healthpromoting.com Learning Center articles, and Telling the Truth About High Blood Pressure is the article I'm looking at right now.
Mm-hmm.
And since, contrary to what many people have been led to believe, high blood pressure is not a condition that requires patients to take drugs for the rest of their lives.
Well, the one thing, you know, if you follow traditional medical advice, the one thing they'll promise you is, if you follow our advice, you'll never get well, you'll never recover, and you'll be dependent on these drugs for the rest of your life. And you'll have to deal with the side effects that range from chronic cough to impotence to fatigue. because the medications have nothing to do with getting you well. They work, it's either a diuretic like hydrochlorothiazide, which forces the body to eliminate some of the blood volume and lowering the pressure, or it's a beta blocker to affect how your heart's contractility work, or it's a calcium channel antagonist, or it's any one of the other number of medications, all of which are basically just trying to eliminate the consequences of your poor diet and lifestyle choices. With this approach, you actually eliminate the underlying reason why you developed hypertension to begin with. There's no need to have to be using medications once blood pressure is normalized, and so you don't have to pay the consequences or deal with the side effects.
Now, I noticed here it also says that other important factors to help normalize blood pressure include regular exercise and the elimination of alcohol and tobacco. Some of the people that I work with, they like to have, you know, a few drinks at the end of the day. Can that have an adverse effect on their blood pressure?
It's a huge effect on blood pressure. Even as little as two drinks a week can profoundly affect blood pressure. It's a major risk factor for hypertension. It also is a major disinhibiting factor, which is why some people like the effects of alcohol, because it helps them eliminate the guilt that they feel when they're stuffing their face full of stuff that they shouldn't be eating as well. And
yeah.
So it has an effect directly, and it has an effect indirectly. Also, alcohol has 7 calories per gram. The only thing that's more concentrated is pure fat at 9 calories per gram. So when you're drinking alcohol, it's essentially like drinking liquid fat. The real question you should be asking yourself when you're drinking alcohol is, how fat do I want to be? That's why men, I guess, drink alcohol, because they want to have, instead of having a six-pack, they want to have a keg. You know, they can get those really nice big beer bellies. And then when they bend over, they have that nice crack. I hear chicks really dig that, and that must be why they're doing it.
Yes.
So alcohol essentially is probably one of the more effective means of making sure we don't lose any of that extra fat by drinking liquid calories that don't provide normal satiety, that disinhibit our conscious mechanism.
Right.
And not to mention the deleterious effect of the hepatotoxic agent alcohol itself, which is why people that drink too much get cirrhosis of the liver, fatty infiltrate, because of the damaging toxic effect from this obnoxious substance.
Yeah, I would have to agree it's an obnoxious substance. But you're saying that two drinks a week can affect your blood pressure.
Can affect your blood pressure and also your risk for conditions like breast cancer.
Wow. And since so many of my listeners are worried about their erectile functioning, what effect, how does the alcohol, I mean, I think you would probably want to know, how does the alcohol affect my blood pressure?
Well, as far as I understand, as far as erectile function, it's going to be more indirect than direct, unless you take a significant amount of alcohol, and then there's a rather famous consequence in terms of the...
Yes. And, well, see, this was one of the things that I was trying to talk to some of my clients who are kind of resistant about the idea that alcohol could affect it. It's like, well, of course I don't get drunk, because then, of course, it would affect my erection.
Right, but if a lot is bad, a little bit must be good. I don't think so.
Yeah. But we're talking about it actually affecting one's ability, one's cardiovascular health, right? Not in the moment, but long term.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And there's also short-term effects in terms of maintaining appropriate vascular and neurological function. But the biggest concern I have is the long-term effect on overall health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, so maybe what we should do now is talk a little bit about some of these delicious recipes. I don't know if you're prepared to entice us with some of the foods that are in the book Bravo.
I can tell you a funny story on one dish. He has a fabulous mango banana pie. And this is a pie that's made without any sugar, oil, or salt. And also, by the way, these are gluten-free recipes. So there's no wheat flour or rye used. So for people that are gluten-sensitive, this is a fabulous tool. But the patient made the mango banana coconut pie and took it to their family holiday get-together. And she said the most amazing thing was that not only did she love it, but her teenage children liked it. But they said a funny thing. They said, "Mom, this mango pie is really good, but it's got mangoes in it."
Well, that's terrible.
Well, they just had never really, you know, because normally it's a sugary syrup with mango flavor rather than actually using some mango.
Oh, I hear some of the major cereal companies are saying they've got blueberry cereal and there's not a shred of blueberry in there.
Right.
So
we have he makes a fabulous vanilla granola, which he uses, again, no salt, no oil, no sugar. But it's very, very tasty, and it's nice because it's a quick, fast, and convenient food. He has fabulous salad recipes, wonderful soups, and as well as your, you know, the casserole dishes, the grains, the beans. It's just a whole array of food, all of which has been extremely well tested at the True North Health Center, and the recipes are well developed. In fact, it was interesting because the publisher actually tested every recipe in the book because they were doing the photography for the book. And they were very excited by the product, and they said we got the ultimate compliment. The publicity company that's been that actually was responsible for setting up this radio show told me that they had to take the Bravo cookbooks out of the mailroom at their business because the staff were taking them home. And so they were running out of promo copies to send out to the radio stations because even though they represent like 180 books and nobody cares about books in a book place, but the Bravo cookbook is
probably why I didn't get offered a review copy. And I'm sitting here going, I want to know about the mango banana pie.
Well, I think you should call them back up and tell them you want your review copy and get it back from the secretary in the shipping department. It really is a fabulous. It is a fabulous book. It looks really good. It's got really good recipes in it. And the thing that I'm excited about is people can actually make the foods. It's from readily available ingredients, and because it's sugar, oil, salt free, it gives them a anything in the book they can have.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. So that makes it easy so that you're not sitting there scratching your head, because I know a lot, I have a very restrictive diet because I've got food allergies and blood sugar sensitivities, and oftentimes the equation for me is, well, I can't have this, and I can't have that, and I can't have, and so then what can I have? And
absolutely.
And then I just don't have a big imagination that way. You said you weren't great on, you're good on eating but not cooking, and I'm definitely in that category.
So, and yeah, now I want to just tell you a little bit about the chef to give you an appreciation of what's going on. This gentleman spent 4 years at the Greenbrier Inn in Virginia, which is one of the traditional places for training, you know, high-end resort-based chefs. And then he took the job as the executive inn at the Kenwood Inn, where he, you know, served, you know, very conventional food preparation. When he came to work for us, when I was interviewing him, we had an interesting conversation because I said that, you know, we would give him a really good job where he would be able to, you know, get home on time and have a life and see his kid grow up and all those kind of things. And he was interested, and I said there was a few little caveats. One, it was vegan food. And he said, well, he knew vegetarian food, and he thought he could adapt to that. I said, well, we also are completely oil-free. And he said, well, what about olive oil? And, you know, no, no oil. Oh, no oil. Well, he thought he could work his way around that. I said, we also are sugar-free. And he said, well, what about honey and agave and maple syrup? I said, no, no, no concentrated sweeteners. He said, oh, my goodness, no sugars and no oils and no animals. Oh, my goodness. I said, oh, there's one more thing. And he said, now, what's that? I said, we also don't use any added salt. He got up and started to walk out of the room.
He did.
He got to the door and he turned around and he said, you know, this is going to be an interesting challenge. I'll give you 6 months. I'm going to have to throw out everything I know and completely start over. This was 6 years ago. Now, what was interesting, in the first few months, he lost 30 pounds because he was eating this food at work. And then he adopted the diet at home and he lost another 30 pounds. And now he's fit and fabulous. And he's one of the only chefs that I know that really looks the part.
Oh, my.
And so what he's done is he's taken that conventional training and he's applied it to whole natural foods. And what he told me was, you know, the only way you can make foods taste good without oil, salt, and sugar is to start with good food. If you use oil, salt, and sugar, you can take any heavily federally subsidized grain like corn, soy, or wheat. You put enough sugar, oil, and salt on it and people will think it's good.
Yeah.
But when you get rid of all that artificial chemical stimulation, now you actually have to come up with a way to deal with real food. And that's exactly what he's done in Bravo, is how to take simple real food, make it look and taste good, and still be healthy.
I'm getting hungry just hearing about it. So, once again, the book is called Bravo, and it's by Ramses Bravo. Now, where's the best place for our listeners to get a copy?
They can go to our website at truenorthhealth.com. They can go to amazon.com, or they can order it through their bookstores.
Oh, fabulous. Well, this has been a very informative hour for me. I learned a lot that I'm going to take back to my clients, and I really appreciate it. Once again, my guest tonight was Dr. Alan Goldhammer, and he's from the founder of the True North Health Center in Santa Rosa. And if you want to find more about this, maybe even get your free telephone consultation, contact the True North Health Center at the website, truenorthhealth.com. And really appreciate you joining us in the Shame-Free Zone tonight. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me on.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with you. Sering kesepian, kenapa tak mutus kabar?